You filed a flight plan to mountain rescue. If we don't report in, they'll come looking for us.
Now that's how it's supposed to work, except I put in a flight plan for Borum Caverns, and this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno?
We're in the wrong cave.
Where are we?
It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. No one's ever been down here before.
Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to stay alive without your mommy and daddy, or die with them? That's a tough question, huh?
Who's moving? It was alive. It knows we're here. We just have to go. We have to go.
We can't do that.
You didn't see it. I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they'd kill us.
We're being quarantined here. We are being kept here to die.
While you were looking for me, I was looking for you. Well, I got you now.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Didn't walk very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs.
And I'm gonna do the same to you.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, my friend?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, sir?
I am fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing really good. Today is December 10th, 2020, for folks that are curious for Pam. But all I have to do is say Taylor Swift's new album, Evermore. And you'll know the date. It's being released.
No, they won't. And everyone will have forgotten it within 30 seconds of you saying
nobody cares, and it's actually tomorrow anyway, so let's move on.
That's right. And Taylor Swift's birthday in 3 days.
Nobody cares.
Anyway, it's a great day because the surprise announcement of Taylor
Swift. It was until you started talking about this shit.
All right, well, let's move on to the next person in the state of, let me rephrase, in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Hi, everyone. This is Abe.
Abe, how's it going?
I'm doing okay.
Excellent, excellent. And we usually have another co-host named Chrissy from the state.
But she's dead to us.
State of Connecticut. Yeah, she's unable to join us probably for the next couple of weeks anyway due to the December shenanigans. But we are still here, and we are here to bring some stuff. And who we are, for folks who are new to the podcast, this is Dark Discussions Podcast, which is part of the Dark Discussions Network. You can find it at www.darkdiscussions.com. Also, you can find us wherever podcasts are found, besides listening to us directly from the website. So Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, whatever, wherever you listen to podcasts. We are under the Dark Discussions podcast feed, as well as the Dark Discussions network of podcast feed, which includes about 27 other different podcasts, basically everybody on the network. But if you just want to hear Dark Discussions, just go to Dark Discussions podcast to hear us. Also, Eric, what else can people find on the website?
Oh, they can find some articles written by myself as well as other people, as well as links to other friends of the site. We got a whole bunch of other podcasts on the network now. Did you say 30 now, Phil?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, so poke around the site. You're bound to find something that interests you. Also, on every page of the site, you'll find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon's the service that allows you to financially support your online artists. If you'd like to do so, you can follow that link or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all these submissions from our patrons and draw one at random on a quarterly basis to do an episode about. So if you would like to do that, we'd greatly appreciate it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link to Patreon on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Yep, that's right. And you can contact us, and we'll read your email on the podcast. So just go to darkdiscussions.com and press the contact us link, or email darkdiscussions@aol.com. We're on Twitter, darkdiscussion1, and we're also on Facebook, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. And darkdiscussions.com is basically an all news, genre news website. So find out all the new releases coming out, articles, reviews, all that stuff besides the podcast. So try to make that your one of your daily sites to check out news. And we're also always looking for new contributors. So if you are a columnist or a writer or someone that just wants to start writing or has a blog that's too small and wants to get noticed, contact us, and we will get you on board. We're looking for some writers. All right, so we do have some emails here, and the first one, it's from a guy named John Appleby. John Appleby is part of the UK listenership. He is on Twitter. And we mentioned him on our Beach House episode because he had contacted us through Twitter there, and I read some of his tweets there. And he wrote us again, and he says, oh, my God, thanks for mention on the excellent episode 464 about the Beach House. My daughter said I'd fabricated it. My Twitter name pronounced Durham. Say it fast, as in my beautiful city of Durham and Pooley, and my soccer team Hartlepool United. Stephen King, by the way, lived in Durham too, but Maine rather than in the UK. So John Appleby is on Twitter, and if you want to follow him, Durham Pooley is his Twitter name. So I appreciate that. Thank you for contacting us, and actually thank you for listening and giving us dibs on Twitter. Every so often he posts and lets us know that he listened and he liked the episode. So appreciate it. I don't think he's on our Facebook group, but can't blame him. It's bad enough being on one social media.
Facebook is awful.
Oh, it's a terrible place.
Yeah, it's a nasty place.
Yeah. All right, so I guess we can get into our topic tonight, but before we do, it's kind of a traditional thing that we've been doing, Eric. What do we do now? Once a year during the holidays, we kind of try to do
drink till we pass out.
That's a good thing too. But we try to do a themed episode. Is it kind of sort of
like a holiday theme?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think today's the first day of Hanukkah, but this film here is.
So we're going to do Jerusalem again.
No, actually, that was a good
the
one.
Golem.
No. The Golem? No, we're not, actually. But this one is another holiday during this time of year about Christmas, and this film here is kind of our theme. I forget what we did. Oh, yeah, we did All Through the House once, and then we did P2 last year, and then we did Red Christmas the year before.
Didn't
so this
Better Watch Out one year?
Yes.
I think we did,
out.
Yes, we
better
did,
watch
yeah.
Out. Yep, we did. So we've done a few.
Krampus. And
Krampus, yeah, that's another one. And this one is
the good one.
The next one. Yeah. Well, there's a few others out there too that are pretty good, like Jack Frost. Not the one, the comedy one, but the horror one. That's pretty good. And there's a few others, but this is a brand new film, a 2020 film, which is appropriate because we're trying to get films for our end of the year list, which is going to be coming up shortly. The best of horror. Based off of our reviewers here on Dark Discussions. But let's get to the topic tonight. So, Eric, what are we going to do tonight?
Tonight, we're going to watch a 2020 movie currently available for digital rental called Host.
Years ago, a father and his family lived in a big, bright house.
How did you feel, Cassie?
Yeah, fine.
Where's dinner, Mum? Bed's starving!
Oh, please, darling, love.
My dad did that to me all the time.
I just like things the way they are. Don't you?
And one day, the father decided to invite some guests inside.
Right on time. Come in, Lucy.
Thank you.
Do you know how this story ends? They destroy everything he loves.
Shut up! No!
That's right. Hosts is a brand new film from the UK. This is a different host from the Korean film from a few years ago, or Hosts from Shudder that also came out this year, which is only like a 50-minute film. This one is Hosts. And
with an S on the end.
That's right. And this film here is what we call a Christmas themed, because it takes place during the Christmas time, and it actually was a little more Christmassy than I thought, because it was in the background. It's directed by Adam. I'm sorry.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Directed by Adam Leader and Richard Oakes. It's their first film, written by them as well. Stars a bunch of folks that are pretty much unknown to me, but I'll list a few of them. Samantha Loxley, Jennifer K. Preston, Neil Ward, Nadia Lamin, Frank Jakeman, and a few others. The film is getting pretty good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it's around 90% or something, though, of course, that's only with about 20 or so reviews, but that's still pretty good. And Eric, you suggested it, so we'll talk about how you got, you know, heard about it and all that. So I guess we can get into our thoughts and how we heard about it. So Eric, let's start with you. How did we hear about this and your thoughts?
I don't know exactly how I first heard about it. It may have been, I follow, Dark Sky Films on Twitter. And it may have been one of their tweets that allowed me to first be aware of this movie. And I was looking at it, and it, has a very striking cover art, which caught my attention, and I noticed it was set around Christmas time, so I was like, hey, maybe this can be our holiday episode. So I watched it. I liked it in general. I had a couple of quibbles, which we'll discuss after we get the spoiler flag up. But in general, I thought it was pretty good. I liked some of the effects in this movie. Good gore. yeah, so I thought it was pretty good.
Okay, very well. Abe.
So, yeah, I just heard about this when we were trying to decide after last week's travesty. And so this was what we settled on. I watched it today, keep it fresh, because I just in case, as I usually do. I didn't know much about it, so I was going in blind. It's a decent movie. It has some really cool shots. Yes, I definitely agree with Eric on that. There's some really cool ones, and some are a little weaker than others. I think there's some good performances as well. Some moments when characters try to be evil, they kind of sound more cheesy at times, and other times they really are really effective. There's some great scenes and shots as well that I really thought were fantastic, and then others were less so. There were character behaviors and choices that kind of irked me a lot. And I, you know, there was some moments I was scratching my head, but overall it wasn't a bad experience. So overall it wasn't a bad, you know, it wasn't a bad flick. Pretty decent. And, you know, just right, just in time for the holiday seasons of this nasty little year we've been riding through.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I heard about it because the Dark Discussions Network got the screener, and we sent out the screener for our screener podcast that we've had 2 episodes released so far. We still have a 3 more coming out before we get into the next quarter of screeners. But this one was for the podcast, the Art House to the Grindhouse podcast, which is basically podcasts in the network review screeners. And this one was reviewed by Cut to the Chase, Dan and Lucy. I mean, Lucy. Dan and let me cut that out. Dan and Lacey from Cut to the Chase. And they actually were so-so on the film. They didn't really like it. So I wasn't sure what it was going to be, if it was going to be any good or not. But I always love going in blind to films.
And that worked out so well last week.
Hey, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to do it. And this one, yeah, I didn't see the trailer. I didn't read anything about it. Eric suggested it. So the screener had expired because this, again, the screener came out like 2 months ago, and it expired probably since then when the movie went live on VOD. So I rented it, I think, 2 nights ago, maybe last night. I can't even remember. It oddly reminded me of another English film called Caught from 2017 that I recommended to Eric a few years back in 2017, starring April Pearson, the actress that was in a film that we did called Fractured. It kind of reminded me of that. But besides that, I actually thought this film was really damn good. A complete surprise, a very, very pleasant surprise, actually. I thought it was a really solid film. I think I know one of the problems that Eric's going to bring up, and I'll bring up, that was a quibble, but I let it go because otherwise the film really entertained me, had some really good acting, some strong gore moments, great villains, interesting in the sense that it took the, I guess, possession or body snatching to a different way about it. So it felt a little original, even if it wasn't 100% original. And it was a big thumbs up for me. So I could see this possibly breaking my top 10. For horror of 2020. That's how much I enjoyed it. Mike?
I don't know if I heard about this film so much I was ordered to watch it, because I think this came up in the last podcast, and by the time we were done discussing that film, I think all of our defenses were down. And we just surrendered, and we did it. But no, I watched this. I did predict unofficially that we would like this movie better than last week's, and
big gambler.
Everybody,
big gambler.
Before you continue, Mike, for everybody who's curious what Mike's saying, since these episodes are always released out of order, Dark Discussions episodes are, we recorded a film called The Giant last week, and that's the film that you're referring to. It's not the actual episode before this episode.
Yes, and I also thought we would like this one better than the Stephanie Meyer film Host. Which,
oh, that's right.
Which we reviewed way back in the early days because Phil wanted to, and I was fortunate enough to be watching it in an empty theater, and I would have fallen asleep, but I was able to get up and walk around the theater because that's the only way I could stay awake during that film. So the bar was very low for this movie, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. There was one scene I had a real issue with, in terms of it just was badly executed. Now, this is a lower budget film. Maybe they were running out of time or money. Maybe it was a quick pickup to reshoot something. I don't know what happened there. And we'll talk about that later. But otherwise, I liked the performances for the most part. I liked the concept. kind of in our conversation about Oprah in 24 Hours with the director and the composer, it's like, it's not that it necessarily does anything stunningly original. It just takes a familiar thing and puts its own little twist on it and does it well for me. And this has a strong contender for the kill of the year in my book.
Oh, for sure.
In part because it's something so Looney Tunes about it. And just the timing, the suddenness, the kind
no
of
effing way moment.
And there's sort of the nonchalantness of the way it's delivered. I just really, and it was coming on the heels of really a scene. We're not in spoilers yet. So, and if I were to tell you how the death is set up, it would spoil it for you. So I don't want to do that. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with the film. I haven't been ranking my movies yet this year. I have no idea where it's going to fall. It'll almost certainly end up probably in my top 20. So I liked it.
All right, very good, very good. So it seems like everybody enjoyed it, depending on how much.
Right, different levels of enjoyment, but all enjoyment.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, so everybody would give it a positive review, even if it's not a top 10 for some. So, yeah, that's a good thing, all in all. All right, so, Eric, do we have a wiki for this one?
Wiki. You know what? I'm not going to read this wiki as it's written. I'm going to adjust it on the fly. A family invites their neighbors over for dinner, and things do not go as planned. That's my
version
of the wiki.
That's an understatement.
Good man, Eric, because, I did see – I saw two versions of the plot descriptions for this, and the first version was sort of like yours. And I didn't – and I was like, is this another one of those like – home invasion-y kind of things, holding people out. So that was that. And then the second one, which I think I read right before watching the movie, gave me a little bit more hope that it wasn't just going to be something we quite the same way.
Well, there was the description on iTunes is really detailed. I'm like, what are they even doing putting this up there? And then the one here on IMDb is a little too detailed.
Spoilery?
It's no fun if you know what's coming. So, I just modified it on the fly. So, after you watch the movie, if you think you're interested, go read the blurb on IMDb.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't say who or what, but it says...
Yeah.
It doesn't say who, but it says what. So it's not a good.
So it does kind of give the whole surprise away.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I mean, me going in blind, seeing nothing except
particularly sensitive to these things, so it may not be that bad in other people's opinion. But I'm willing to live with my decision to edit the wiki on the fly.
It's not that bad, but it still works. It's
right.
I don't think it's the worst thing in the world. To know this one going in, but I think it's no harm in holding back.
Exactly. And especially how it begins, and not knowing who the lead character is, the wiki can kind of ruin that a little bit. But we'll get it all out. All right, so I guess
we want to throw up the spoiler flag pretty quick on this one.
Yeah, I think a couple of things before we do, though. The first 10 minutes of the film, I put on the subtitles and then started the movie from the beginning again because there was a lot of cockney.
I had subtitles on too, Phil.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I'm not the only one. Yeah. So the even though it is in English, I was being Chevy Chase in European Vacation because I couldn't understand any of the Cockney and the accents. It felt like watching
– You said Cockney.
It felt like watching that film that Ewan McGregor was in with Robert Carlyle, directed by the Academy Award director there. What the hell's his name?
Not Snatch.
No, not that one. That was a good one, too, to have the subtitles on. But
Black Stock and Two Smoking Girls.
That's another good one, too. But it's not that one. It was...
Attack of the Clones?
Shit. Danny Boyle's film. Danny Boyle.
28 Danny Days Boyle. Later? Nope, Train Spotting.
Train Spotting, thank you. That's the one. I couldn't understand anything in that film. Robert Carlyle was like, what the fuck did
What was it? Cockneys versus Zombies? That surprisingly had a lot of Cockney accents in it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I would think but yeah, so it's like Train Spotting, so you definitely need the subtitles unless you're from the UK.
Well, the funny thing is, as the movie progressed, it got better.
Yes.
But at the beginning, I was like, I gotta turn these on. I don't understand anything.
The whole scene in the field, I was like,
right. Yeah.
Because they use it slang and all this. And it's like, but when they're with their wives, they start talking much more proper. It's kind of funny. So that's all I had before the spoiler alert. Anybody else? Any general things? Anything?
I love the music over the credits at the end. That was pretty awesome.
Yes, it was. Actually, the whole credit scenes that were pretty good with their animations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty neat. Yeah. I'm with you, Eric. All right, so I guess we'll I'll set it up before we throw out the spoiler. But basically, there's this young guy who's a train driver. Ends his shift for the day, gets off, is close enough home that he doesn't need a car, so he starts walking. He cuts through this field, and this guy that he sees out there dressed as Santa Claus, and they meet up, and basically that guy was hunting for pheasants or quail, and basically we find out that they're neighbors, and the young guy was invited over for, I guess, Christmas Eve dinner or Christmas Day dinner. And so that's basically the setup. That's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that scene made me think it was going to be more like Train Spotting, though, because the way they were talking and stuff, I just assumed they were going to be working class, crazy people like Star and Train Spotting. And Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, or something like that. But it wasn't. But anyway, Mike, go on.
I really enjoyed that opening moment because it just was such, to me, a weird image of watching Santa Claus walking through a field.
With some dead pheasants,
With some dead pheasants. And again, now I'm not a hunter. I have no objection to hunting. But it's just such a weird juxtaposition of Santa the hunter. It's just,
Santa's,
I was like,
gotta eat too.
I know Santa's got to eat. He's got reindeer meat, but yeah, it was just such it was just a fun image. It was just it was unexpected, and kind of left me wondering, okay, where is the rest of this going to go? And it did not go anywhere where I thought it was going to go, necessarily, at least, you know, not at first. Yeah. Because who ends up being the lead character surprised me.
Right. And also based off of that first scene where with the Cockney accent, the weird thing of Santa hunting, the guy complaining that he's gonna cut off his beard when he gets home because the wife doesn't like it and all this other stuff. I thought it was gonna be another one of those grindhouse cult type films that Quentin Tarantino-esque. And that's how I thought it was going to go. But yeah, it switches almost immediately to more mainstream horror. And you're right, the who's going to be the lead character and all this other stuff. All right, so I guess we can throw out the spoiler. And we're going to talk about everything and anything.
So if you haven't seen the film, and you don't want to be spoiled, then, you know, maybe skip ahead.
Yeah, you can,
or just go watch it.
Yeah, you should. It's worth watching. It's, available anywhere VOD is found. Myself and I assume you, Eric, watch it on Apple. I know Voodoo. Voodoo, Mike? What's it called?
Yeah, I watched it on Voodoo.
Yeah, Voodoo and Amazon Prime. Not Amazon Prime, but Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can get it anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah, so you can find it anywhere and go ahead and do so. All right, so we critique and review, so that's why we spoil. So, all right, where do we want to start? What do we want to talk about? I guess, yeah, everybody probably thought the train guy was going to be the lead character, right?
Yeah, I did, because it starts out with his character. We get to know him and his wife slash girlfriend. I wasn't sure which it was at that moment. They're clearly together. They're living together, but you know, hey, it's 2020. And they developed them as main characters. And I know it's a story about, because they don't specify in the plot descriptions I had read, the blurbs I had read, who is the host of this dinner, of this Christmas thing, just that there are Christmas guests that arrive and ruin everything. And so you're watching them and you're enjoying them. I'm enjoying them anyway. And you're like, oh, they're adorable. They're such nice people. They are clearly going to be the main characters for this. And then a thing happens outside and you go, well, there we go. Those are going to be the entrance of the evildoers to come into their abode. And no, that is not at all what happens. And and all that character development they've done for these two in the first 10 minutes of the movie, it gets flushed away like Thanksgiving dinner at about 10 o'clock p.m.
Well, but and I think it was really well done though, because it doesn't give you the idea they were expendable characters.
Oh right, I'm not criticizing it for that. It adds a little tragedy to what happens when you know that, and it also makes it more plausible that they get as far as they do with their weird, because they are. You know, in the story, because they act bizarre from the moment the visitors arrive, right? They are acting weird, and we know they're acting weird. We needed to see their normal to know that they're weird, but we also need to see their normal to understand why the Harringtons, was it? Was that the family?
I don't know.
Oh, the next door neighbor?
Yeah. They have this nice young couple invited over for Christmas dinner.
Right.
Henderson's. I should remember. It was because I was thinking, okay, first they got to bring over Harry and now they're bringing over this couple. I remember that in my head.
Yeah. And it's not going to be Irish, man. It's going to be British. So Henderson's.
You were talking about, there's one thing, and we haven't gotten there yet, but you were talking about one thing that bugged you that maybe was due to budget. And if that's the case, then it's a really interesting decision to go with that beginning, because I'm guessing that shooting that train scene wasn't cheap. It's a whole other place you got to go and shoot, right? Where they could have left it out, and I don't think it would have hurt the movie all that much. You just wouldn't have had as much of the feeling that these are the main characters being set up.
Yeah, you know, Eric, that's a good question. I mean, again, it's not expensive in the sense that it's just a train, right? I mean, all you need to do is find a train and use the train, especially if it's in your town. And that could be the case. They could be young film creators, and then they went to school with the local train people, or their father owns works at the train company or something, you know. So it may not have been as expensive as you want, but
that's
but
a whole absolutely bunch of assumptions you're making there.
I've seen enough movies that make the environment around them the production values. So you know, like a Hammer film would just use an awesome looking castle in the middle of Wales or Romania or wherever they filmed, and it looks expensive when all it is a castle that's already been there for years and they're just renting it out for the day or something. So
I would agree with you 100% if he was just riding on the train, but he was driving the train. They were up in the, it's not a cockpit, what do you call it on a train? The engine? Yeah.
The engine car. Right. Yeah.
Oh, but, you know, it's also, there was no one else on there. So it's probably that maybe they knew so. I would feel maybe they knew somebody on there and just had to use the train for a quick, you know, short shot.
This wasn't meant to be a 10-minute discussion. I was just making a quick point.
No, I was just saying. But I think, as I said, because usually a lot of times when they establish a quote unquote main character, they usually show them as their everyday life and what, you know, just kind of like. He has to look the average Joe. He's kind of like really tired, worn out. You know, it's very relatable in a sense. And then you get into his chemistry with his wife or his girlfriend, whatever, and how they really bonded and stuff like that. So it's also nice to set up for just not just to trick the audience into thinking these are the main characters, but also just make it feel less like just extras getting eaten by some monster in the background kind of thing.
Also, I like what Mike mentioned too, how, you know, they're kind of a cute couple and all that. And it was kind of surprising because, again, when he was talking to the Santa hunter, you know, they're using the Cockney and slang.
Santa
and all
hunter.
This.
That makes it sound like he's hunting Santa.
Yeah. And they're, you know, using Cockney and slang and all this. And I'm thinking, all right, this is going to be like train spotting, you know, degenerates or whatever. And then when he gets home, you know, they're actually a fairly normal couple and whatnot, and they develop it really well. And then when we see, or I should say, well, we do as well, but when the girlfriend or wife sees intruders out in the garden, the backyard, then everything begins to change. And even at that point, I didn't know if it was going to be the intruders or if it was just going to be kids or, you know, a red herring or something of that nature. But I was curious, the actress, she really played it up for fears. Like, oh, my God, there's intruders. We're in trouble and all that. And he was more nonchalant. Oh, I'll get the torch, they call it. I'll get the torch and we'll go out in the backyard. And it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. And I thought it was a very, very effective horror scene all the way to the point where they cut away from the house and they go to the next family.
Mm-hmm.
So to play it the way they did, where they're a nice couple, and then the intruders and what happens, it was a moment for a horror film that actually disturbed me.
And we haven't said it out loud yet, so just to be clear, these are alien invaders, yes?
No.
I think they're demons.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're
demons. Okay.
Basically, my guess, and again, you just said we're in spoiler territory, as people know, they're demons from the mine that the neighbor's father used to work in.
Okay.
And that's what I kind of got.
That's why I was asking,
because it wasn't really 100% clear.
Yeah.
Nobody uses the word demon or alien for that matter. So right. I was just having the conversation.
Well, there are things they talk about.
It's like a will of a wisp or something like that.
Yeah. They mention the whole thing about the father and being like exiled or cast, something like that.
Well, so, this mine had some kind of ore or something like that. Okay, so kind of skipping ahead, there's a point where one of the possessed starts telling the youngest child of the family basically the story of a father who, you know, invited strangers into their home, and then once he was satisfied with what he could take from them, he cast them out. There's mention of a garden and stuff like that. So I guess the ore, which is basically we see this portal is kind of like this tunnel. It's kind of like this barren, dark place, which gives me the thought that maybe this mine possessed some kind of ore or jewels to kind of strip this quote unquote garden of its beauty and stuff like that. And the demons are come back to punish. Well, I don't know if humanity or at least this town in general for taking that.
Yeah, I got the Garden of Eden parallel, but I didn't understand what it was in reference to. So I guess it's the mine?
That's what I thought it was, because otherwise
The other thing I was thinking was that they were referring to, trying to punish God and stuff like that for being cast in hell and stuff like that. And this is their plan to rise up and take human bodies and stuff.
Okay.
That was my other thought, but, you know.
And it makes more sense that they're demons because I had some questions about their behavior, but if they're demons, then I don't have those questions anymore.
Right. Being demons really makes their behavior make a lot of sense.
Yes, it does.
Because they do not need an ulterior motive besides they hate people.
Well, and that's why I was a little confused, because I guess I missed the whole thing about the mine.
Gotcha. Yeah. If we want to get into it, it's basically these flat floating lights, or even other things, because you can watch them through TVs and stuff too. But the first thing is the two quote unquote torches or flashlights, if you prefer, that the woman,
British language.
Yeah, and I forget her name, the character's name. Is that Lucy? I think it's Lucy.
I've got it written down. Hold on.
The girlfriend? Yeah, it's Lucy.
Yes. Lucy. So Lucy sees in the backyard aren't actually flashlights or torches. They're actually floating orbs, like I was mentioning, Will-O-the-Wisps. And basically when the character that we thought was the lead, and his name was it Jack? I can't remember. I should have wrote these
Jack,
names.
Jack, yeah, the Jack. Boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, IMDb has all these names.
Yeah, well I have it here up. It's just that I wasn't sure if Jack was – I would have to press on the name and see the actor's face. Jack goes out, and when he goes out, the orbs somehow get inside, and they basically go into your mouth or your eyes or something, and they possess you, and you become basically body snatched.
Yeah.
And so when he comes in, he sees Lucy being body snatched, and he's trying to help her, and it cuts away, and basically what occurs is that he also gets body snatched as well. And we saw two orbs in the garden earlier, so those were the two orbs anyway.
So who else who saw two orbs in the garden? Adam. And we know what happened then.
Right. Excellent analogy there.
I like the orbs effect. So we see this as Jack is putting on a Christmas sweater that he doesn't want to, that Lucy has gotten him. I'm guessing from the reaction, she knows it's a horrible sweater because she's not offended by the fact that he calls it a horrible sweater.
Right.
and he's just given her this wonderfully thoughtful, cheesy Christmas gift about, you know, you're the best teacher ever sort of thing. And he's putting on the sweater and she sees the lights go by. So he doesn't see it. But we catch her and we see her, and it doesn't look like Close Encounters, floating orbs, and it doesn't look to me like a car going by or people running around with flashlights. Obviously, this is a very earthly thing because it was made on Earth, but I think they did a really neat job of getting those because they go by really quick and they're asynchronous enough that you don't know what it was.
Right. Yeah, I actually rewound to see what she saw, and it looks like they're two flashlights that are pointed low, they're not holding it up. It looks like two people just carrying flashlights by their side. That's how I got. And of course, then it wasn't. It's the orbs. All right. So where do we want to go from here? What do we want to talk about?
Well, one of the things I had an issue with in this movie is because, first of all, I guess that the demons have access to all of the thoughts and memories of the people they're inhabiting, because otherwise they wouldn't know they're invited to dinner.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
So they show up there and they're acting super weird, and they don't say a word until after the dinner scene. And that, to me, would be like, if you're essentially family with these people, somebody would have said something.
Yeah. The behavior was way too off. It was definitely too, you know, like eyebrow raising. There's just like, something's really off. Like, this wasn't like them like being shy behavior. This was like they're almost like dead inside, kind of robotic.
Right. So that was probably my number one bugaboo with this movie, is that it seems to me like the people hosting the dinner there really would have been able to tell that something was wrong.
Right. I don't mind them not acting normally, even with access to memories, because, you know, that's knowledge versus understanding, mm-hmm. you know, that they can quickly recall, oh, this person is Lucy or whatever, you know, that they could do. As opposed to really understand, but that's very different from understanding how to behave naturally. But yeah, their behavior was obviously bizarre and goes uncommented on and unnoticed by everyone there. And only some of them were preoccupied with other things.
Right.
That they wouldn't have noticed. I do think Mom notices something when Lucy's chopping the onions.
Yes.
Or girl, whatever she was it onion she was chopping?
Yeah, right. Onions.
Yes.
Okay.
Not the onions.
And Phil, is that allowed?
Yeah, that's
okay,
that's
just
fair.
Checking.
Yeah, that, that's fair.
I want to make sure this is within the bounds of the Geneva Convention.
Oh yeah. Oh, believe me, if they had done something stupid, this movie I would have ripped it to shreds at the beginning. So continue.
I'll agree with that, but you know, given that this doesn't go too deep into the film, I was okay with it in the end. I'll take a little cheesiness in a horror film.
Well, it wasn't the cheesiness that was bothering me; it was the unrealistic human behavior that was all.
By cheese, I'm referring to sometimes a little bit of heightened reality of unrealism.
Okay.
Yeah, I think some cheesiness for me was sometimes the delivery of the possessed husband. At times was sometimes strong, and other times when he tried to do the sudden shouting and stuff like that was kind of gave me a giggle. I think the more subdued side of spectrum of character Laura.
Yep.
She was much more. I think she was a lot more subdued and a lot more cold. And I think she.
Oh, you mean Lucy? You mean Lucy?
Lucy was a lot more. I think her performance was a lot more cold and more in line with the presence that these spirits gave. While, you know, the other guy might as well have been just wearing devil horns and jumping around, bouncing around in hooves and stuff like that, because he was kind of cheesing it up a lot more.
Yeah, I thought Lucy was pretty creepy, but what the thing they got bang on right with this movie is the whole effect with the eyes. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That was so cool, especially when they're in the darkness of the doorways.
Right.
It's really cool.
I understood they studied a whole lot of photographs of cats to do that.
Well, and cats dogs. Are green, and they were kind of like a silver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen it with deer, dogs, cats, pretty much any animal. Yeah, it's an effective, scary thing that you see in film.
One of my favorite moments with focus on that was when Lucy is telling the younger brother the whole story, the whole purpose, and then she takes the pliers and pulls
and
out
her own teeth.
But it's just the way she does it. She just then puts it in her hand, closes it like a gift, and puts it to her heart. And it was just like, it's the weirdest, strangest fucking thing. At one point, I would think it was a little excessive, but somehow the way she had led up to that point really was effective.
Well, and although I agree with your observation about the ends of the acting spectrum between those two actors, there was one shot that was probably my favorite shot of the whole movie, is when Jack at one point walks into the hallway of the house and turns towards the camera with the silver eyes that just looked creepy as fuck, and that was awesome.
Yeah, that was good.
What, to me, one of the more creepy moments was there's the shot, I think, when they were in the attic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Lucy's
tongue is out. And just the slime oozes
off of her tongue.
And I know if for some reason we were to interview the actors for this, that's what I want to ask about.
Is that real saliva? Did you do that, or was that
like,
aided?
What toxic stuff, like KY jelly, did they make you hold in your mouth?
Well, maybe they hold up some cheesecake in front of her.
Oh, God. That was gross.
Kinky.
Another thing I liked, I'm sorry, I'm bopping all over the place. Did you still want to go plot?
Anything you want to say, Eric? Just all good. Yeah.
Okay. I also liked how a couple of the people that had been possessed, for lack of a better term, when they got killed, the very last second before they died, they abandoned the host, and so it was the person again. Kill them right before they die.
The thing is that they could, those moments when they were dying, they could have, the attack could have stopped and they could have survived, which makes those deaths all the more horrifying, because it's just like, holy shit, they're back, but the other person doesn't believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was very palpable. It's just like, I guess everybody's got to start choking each other.
Yeah, it happened with Lucy, and it happened with
Michael.
Shit. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I was okay with Lauren clubbing Lucy to death even after she changed back to human, because she didn't know. We kind of figured it out as we were watching. But
I didn't have a problem with it from a character perspective, because after you've gone through what you've gone through and you're in that position, you're not gonna stop. You're past the point of no return.
Well, she did what every horror fan knows that you should do, that most movies don't do, which is when the person is down or the monster's down, you make sure it never gets up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
And that's what she did.
Exactly.
She made sure Lucy was not going to come back, you know, whether or not we knew.
I have to say, though, that was the most fastest tying rope ever. She just flung it over.
About to comment on that, Abe.
And that actually was the scene that I had a problem with, because she's laying on the ground and takes a rope, just throws it over her neck. It wraps it around the neck somehow twice.
Right.
And ends up over the tree branch. And she has the upper body strength to yank her off her feet.
And she'd somehow and gotten the rope positioned well enough that it all held.
Got to remember pulleys, Mike, right? Because it was kind of like you using the tree as almost like a pulley. And second, when Lauren was standing next to the hanging Lucy, you could tell that Lucy was very small and petite and really small. I mean, she was still shorter than Lauren.
That wasn't huge problem. My huge problem was the tying of the rope, because how the hell do you get that done? There's a reason they make nooses the way they do.
Right, exactly. If the rope was already over the tree and the noose was there, I had to rewind it. It's like, did I miss a thing? I was like, did I miss a scene somewhere of her tying a noose?
Did I black
out for a moment? No, it was very ungood. I'm not gonna say like it ruined the movie for me. It did take me out of the movie a little bit.
It was just a moment that made you tilt your head to the side a little.
Like, what?
It was kind of like when you're watching like an old movie or a low budget film, and they do the pullback for the bar fight, and the stuntman is clearly like 100 pounds heavier than the guy he's supposed to be standing in for, and has a badly hidden mustache or something. You know, it's like, that's clearly not him. That's not who he's supposed to be.
Who are you people?
Yeah.
My only other quibble with the movie was that when she grabbed the pitchfork, she uses it to smash the electric box, but then like drops it when she's confronted. It's like, no, you used that to stab some bitches.
I thought that was going to happen. I thought when Lucy Pierce, she was going to suddenly swing the pitchfork and jab her with it.
Right.
And she's like, nope, I'm dropping the only weapon I have.
Oh, she's clearly not a gamer.
Clearly.
Now, of course, if she was a gamer, she would have stopped in the kitchen and grabbed every single herb.
Yeah, mixed. Make sure she mixes the very special effect too.
Right. Well, now I want to get back to so Lucy and Jack scene, the horrific scene happens, and then we switch over to the Henderson family. And I think that's what you said their names was, right, Mike?
Yes, it was Henderson.
Yeah. Yeah. And these folk are another quiet moment for about 15 minutes or so, because the movie, the first, besides Jack and Lucy's horrific scene, the first big moment after that scene doesn't happen until 35 minutes into the film.
Mm-hmm.
So and we learn a lot about the build up. We learn a lot about the Henderson family too. So they really build up the characters pretty solidly for a limited period of time. And you get to empathize with a handful of them. And it's a couple of you kind of annoyed at, but generally, I kind of like those moments because it made them feel not human. Just three dimensional, but four dimensional. And as Abe said, human, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So
no, it was good to have the family element introduced there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Although I got to say, like, when the moment comes at dinner, well, at dinner they're talking and the mom gives a little speech and about how she's got cancer and has been taking chemo and how she made a will. And then the doctors told her that it was pointless because she's in remission. So this is like the best news this family could have gotten just in time for Christmas.
Well, wait a minute. First of all, they've been alluding to the fact a couple of times that there's something they have to tell the family.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she says it, she's setting it up to sound
tragic, right?
Like she's about, like she's going to die in the next 72 hours,
mm-hmm.
right? That the end is near. And this is a woman that we have had no sign of at this point of having any sort of a very wickedly dark sense of humor, right? So it's a very cheesy, sappy moment, I think. And just like an eye-rolling moment when she's like, and I'm in remission, you know, and you're like, you know, it's like so blatantly manipulative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some people would actually be pissed off at something like that. Like, what the fuck, Mom? What the hell?
I mean, I would do something like that, you know, but most people wouldn't.
Well, I don't think I would do it if I had like a small son, a small child there. I mean, just like probably scared to death.
Mom, what's remission? Oh, jeez, British language again. For people, and anyway, sorry, Eric. So then what, Eric? What happens next?
Well, then Lucy, who at least they had the courtesy to show us that she was hiding a hammer under the table, she just stands up and reaches over the table and bashes Mom in the side of the head with a hammer and waits for her to droop a little bit and then switches to an overhand grip and just starts beating her head in on the dining room
bang,
table.
Bang, Maxwell's and, silver and, hammer.
She's not fucking around. It's just a fat. It's not like exaggerated wind up. And she's just like, wham, 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 wham. It's just like, holy shit.
And her smiley face. It's
right. And there's blood splattering all over the rest of the family. And I guess, you know, I was going to complain that nobody tried to stop her, but I guess they could be in shock.
But everybody's going, stop it! Stop it! I was like, why don't you just tackle her? I don't think she's going to stop!
And the best part too was and you, I don't know if you mentioned it, Eric, but the mother is talking about how she's in remission and it's a happy moment. It's like, oh, I'm going to survive. I'm not going to die of cancer in like 3 months, like I'm predicted. And so it's like, oh, this is really cool. And it was really an effective moment. I was like, really moved for that scene. And then wham, wham, wham. It's like, holy shit, that's all for nothing. You survived the chemo and everything and you're dead.
And it just comes out, and right, and it comes at out of nowhere, and you the family goes from this high of highs to this, what? Like, and to me, I can understand why they're stunned, because, like, how, I mean, it's so, it comes literally out of nowhere from a person you wouldn't expect it from, unless you've been, like, paying attention to her fucking weird behavior for the last 15 minutes, you know, and even... As a horror vet, right? You're watching it. You know something's coming. You know she's going to do something horrible, but not then, not that way, not that style. Just like, and that just keeps going and flattens her head into the general shape of a whoopee cushion. I mean, what was they going to get up and say, stop, you're going to smush the only eyeball that's remaining? I mean, and then the best part for me, as blood is splattering all around the table in very much in a scene reminiscent of Aliens, right? It's then Jack says, well, after she just takes her seat back at the table. Jackson, go on, eat your dinner.
Well, she yells at everybody, eat! It's like, right. Wow, alrighty then.
Oh. And of course, you're looking, and you'd see Ben, I think, is like the youngest son, like looking at his soup, and it's full of mom. Because
yeah.
Bits of mom have flown all over the dinner table.
It's cream of mom soup.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, when mom puts herself into her meal, she really puts herself into her meal. Boo!
Boo.
Oh, my God, that was... And it is, it's just sort of the timing of it. It's the effectiveness of it, and just comes sort of... Right, when you're not expecting it. So we were mentioning the People of the Tribe earlier, and I, you know, that just reminded me of the movie Rabies, which was the Israeli horror film for about 2011 or 2012.
I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and that had some very effective kills, and a lot of it was just timing, that they just managed to pull them out when you weren't expecting them, and this one was completely unexpected.
It was possibly... my kill of the year. I think it may make it.
It's way up there. I got to rewatch The Hunt because there were some good ones in there too.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a head get flattened like that.
Yeah. I've heard of horror sometimes bang you over the head with something, but never seen. But this is ridiculous.
I mean, I've seen heads get flattened like that in like Tex Avery cartoons. maybe itchy and scratchy.
Yeah. Get some super glue and just fix her up. She'll be fine.
The final scene of The Fly, I guess, but that's, yeah.
Well, now I want to watch this movie again because I clearly missed something. So maybe you guys can clear this up for me, because I thought it was kind of odd that this whole thing seemed kind of personal. But apparently there was some connection with the dad and the mine. Can you give me detail on that? Because apparently it just went right over my head.
Well, as I mentioned to you earlier, I thought that the demons were out for revenge because the father who had worked at the mine had stripped it.
The grandfather. We don't know. He's already passed by this point.
He's already passed, but basically it's the sins of the father coming back to punish everyone for the actions of someone beforehand.
Okay.
Someone had met, I think one of the possessed had mentioned that it was everybody else would be punished for the actions of somebody else.
So what did Grandpa do then? Just open the mine?
He stripped it. He took what was in his.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know. to be honest, right? I mean, it's just that's what they say.
That's what they say, but that's my guess at first.
Right. We don't know what they mean. Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, these are demons. Demons have a thing against humans because
we're human.
Because we're human, and well, but we're also human, and you know, you've watched Supernatural. You know, the idea that not that it started there, but right, the idea that there might be some who are resentful of the fact that, you know, angels were created and then, you know, some of them were cast down. Then God said, I'm going to make a new thing. And that new thing is going, I'm going to like better than the old thing.
No, I'm fine with all that. It just seemed like these particular demons had a grudge against these people. And I didn't understand why until we were having this conversation.
Oh, I just thought they were evil.
Okay.
That was me. Maybe I missed something, and that's entirely possible. I might have been a little lightheaded last night because I had donated blood yesterday, and then came home and watched the movie.
Yeah, well, this is the way the demons sometimes behave. It's kind of, it does kind of border on personal, and then sometimes it goes as back to kind of methodical. Because one of the things these demons try to do is try to get people to look at the screen. I guess it's some kind of broadcast or some kind of presence coming through the TV that shows them.
Demon TV.
Demon TV, yeah. Demon YouTube. Demon Tubi. And basically get them to look at it, which allows entry for another entity to possess them. But then other times, though, which I let's go to the methodical, but then they go into this moment where they waste so much time messing with these people to, you know, just like for one point, he gets the daughter to force her or trick her into shooting her brother, basically saying, if you don't do this.
That scene was interesting to me because they do try and get her to shoot, but they also give her a gun that's not loaded.
Loaded, yeah.
There's the whole thing where they first start it, he's unconscious, and because they're like trying to get her to do it right then. If she'd done it right then, she would have known that she'd pulled the trigger, but her brother never would have known had she done it before he regained consciousness. But then he regains consciousness, and they had this whole, please don't, well, I got to, I have no choice, blah, blah, blah. And then she pulls the trigger, and he knows she pulled the trigger, and he's like, fuck you.
Yeah, and I guess it's a really interesting thing that at first I thought they were like trying to legitimately test her or corrupt her, because, you know, that's what demons do. But it turns out it was just... On the other hand, it seems like they were trying to also turn the family against each other, but it was just kind of, as I'm saying, kind of the behavior of the demons kind of flip-flops between methodical and kind of just, you know, messing with them.
Yeah.
They could have just forced them all in front of the TV and get them all possessed.
That's true. Well, they're sadists. Demons are sadists, right? And also, they're trying to get the family to tell their dark secrets to each other to make them hate each other, like you said, turn on each other. And the, even though there are quote unquote secrets, none of them were like dark. They were just, you know, a mistake when you know, the father was a kid, or, you know, just little things about lying behind to the sibling or something. So there was nothing like drastically horrible. So I think that was kind of interesting because I was expecting the whole family to be like these dirty, rotten people, and all the dirty secrets are going to come out, and the people are going to really be the evil and all that. But they didn't go that route, and I thought that was kind of fresh, refreshing and original.
Right. Well, the father's the one that has the, as far as we know, because mom didn't really get a chance to spill her guts.
Right, but it's not. It's not
her brain, though. She opened her mind, though.
But it's not. That's true. But it's not like dark and evil.
Right. It's not the worst sin in the world. But I mean, look, the whole theme of the film is family, right?
Right.
And sort of the darker underside to family, and the two kind of serve as. I mean, first of all, Christmas especially in England, because I don't know, because Christmas is more, from what I understand, like Thanksgiving. They have that big family meal then. I don't know if they have another thing. Like, I was actually hearing someone on a podcast talking about it. It's like that it's weird to them that we have like Thanksgiving and then we have it followed up by another Thanksgiving a month later. Right. We have basically two Christmas meals. But so this is their day of the family day. Right. And you're getting all this. You do get all that little passive aggressive and sometimes just aggressive tension, you know, the brother annoying the sister and stuff like that. You have the father who is neglectful of his son that he abandoned, that doesn't know it's just his son. Just coming up, you know, you get all these little things, the kneeling, the daughter to get married and have a baby and all these little things that are there that, you know, family can just sometimes annoy the fuck out of you the way nothing else can.
Speaking of the boyfriend, that's my last complaint about the movie is that when she's alone and has a cell phone, why the fuck is she calling her boyfriend instead of the cops?
Yeah, that was dumb. That was really
exactly. That was what I was referring to.
I'll say this.
911.
We didn't spend a lot of time with this family. We don't know how bright this young woman is. And if you've ever spent some time reading the police blotter, you know some people can be really freaking stupid and just do things
especially if you cough through a cell phone. Because it doesn't go to a local, it goes to like someplace in like the opposite side of the country, and then you have to type all this stuff in, and then it eventually gets to your police department. It's kind of weird how it works, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not saying that. I mean, I was doing the same thing. I was like, why the hell, you know? Like, you know, so
I mean, they do repair that mistake. I mean, it doesn't. There's no mistake for her not calling 911. But they do show that even if she had called 911, the demon would have pretended they were the cops, right? Because they were controlling. But again, though, that still doesn't explain why she didn't call 911, even if she thought she was and she really wasn't.
Right.
And that was my thing. That was what I was referring to at the beginning, Eric, when I thought – that's what I thought you were going to say was your main issue. Because that was my –
That told me that's because I was just like – it was just like, what the fuck? Because she was like – because it was funny because even though it was the demon talking through the phone, it was saying, you know, call the police. And she's like, I can't. I got to get my brother. And I'm like, why can't you do both?
Yeah. Well, you know what? There was another thing that I was worried about. And that was when she said on the phone to her boyfriend or fiancé, he says, why don't you – where are you? I'm in my room laying on my bed. And, you know, he would then kind of infers, why don't you just escape, you know, break, you know, jump out the window, whatever, because it's a one story house. It's not, it's like a ranch. It's not a two floor house. And she says, well, I can't, they have my brother my little brother Ben hostage. So I was thinking she thought if she fled, they would just kill everybody. But I think I still would have took that chance. Because everybody's going to be dead anyway, so it's like, at least you can escape and try to get help.
Bye, girls. Your mom will take care of you.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they killed the mother, so you know they're psychopaths.
It's going to be like that guy at the beginning of 28 Weeks Later.
Bye, everybody. Peace.
See you later.
Well, that's a feel. And to be honest, I didn't. I felt that he wasn't wrong there either, because there was no way you're going to save him. So you and. I don't know. I see all your points, but to stay there and possibly get killed or bolt, try and help, and then get everybody to come back, meaning the cops to come back. I don't know. Versus, it's like, you know, do you give the
I just can't pass up an opportunity to give you a hard time.
Fair enough. But it's like the things in other movies where they say they have a knife to someone's throat and they say drop the gun or slit the throat. And I'm thinking, if you drop the gun, they're going to not only slit the throat, but then they're going to shoot you in the head. So it's like, what do you do? It's a no-win situation, because the moment you give up the gun, you're dead. In real life, not in the movies. In the movies, you know, James Bond moments happen and you escape. But in real life, you're dead.
Yeah.
It's a tough move, tough thing. But either way, they made it sound like she didn't want to leave because she didn't want her brother, little Ben, to get killed. And I said, okay, that makes sense that she just didn't jump out the window.
Well, if she really wanted to get it taken care of, she should have called the police. That's all I'm saying.
True. That's true. I mean, again, it wouldn't have worked because we knew.
What the fuck is her boyfriend going to do about it?
Right. Come here and help! It's like, what the fuck? You dumb bitch!
Well, and he was acting weird. He goes, you got to call the cops. And I'm thinking, why don't you just say, all right, I'm hanging up now and I'm calling the cops. You do the same or something like that. He's asking all these questions. And it's like, just call the hang up and call the cops.
Pretty silly.
Yeah. Let's see. What else do we want to discuss? I actually liked the moment when he talks about the mine and the TV, and it's the old tube TV, the box from the 1970s with the that you know was the center of your furnitures in the den, I guess, or the family room or wherever.
We had a wood enclosed television in my house.
Yeah, we did too. Yeah, and that's what it was. He goes, "This is a memory of my father." You know, that and stuff. And again, this is what you said, Mike. It's talking about family, right? This is all about family and the legacy of family, you know?
Yeah, and even the fact, right, that the demons are cast out by father, right, by God. It's a family thing. Even that's still a family issue. And the jealousy in the family of siblings. The demons are the siblings to the humans, right? Right. You're God's favorite.
Oh, and they also say we come as the light of angels, but we're really demons or something like that because they're fallen angels, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of cool. So yeah, there is a lot of that, but I could see how you miss it, Eric, too, because it's not like spelled out, and you could still think they're like aliens or who knows what they are.
Well, and in my defense, they don't actually state it anywhere in the movie.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Let's see. I was kind of surprised that they were with quails instead of goose, because usually it's they do the goose in England for Christmas. Anyway, I'm gonna say
maybe African swallows will be more of your taste.
Ba-dum-bum from Monty Python. Well done.
I the one thing, because this is my sick mind. I always like the, you know, shoot him or we'll kill somebody, you know, at that time. We've seen that before, but I like the fact that they went, shoot him or he'll wish he was dead. You know?
right.
You know, it's just, and as anyone who's watched The Princess Bride goes, you know you can do things to make someone's life a living hell. And having seen what they did to the mother, part of me was kind of hoping to find out what they were going to do to him.
Right. Well, he even said it.
Well,
it's like the Dawn of the Dead. Does the scene, the remake, the scene when the guy says, "We all want to have the last breath all the way to the end, or whatever," and then he turns to a zombie and they kill him. The father of the girl, I forget the girl's name. And here, it's the same thing. He goes, "I don't care what they're gonna do. I don't want to. I'll take it," because he wants that last breath all the way until, you know. So even though it could be a terrible fate, he's willing to take that chance.
Yeah, I don't think he has a good enough imagination. And at this point, you know, we're pretty sure these are demons, so they're not like just going to like tear off your fingernails.
I would just like open wide, get it over with.
maybe they were planning to make him watch a giant.
But
you're never going to live it down, Phil. Never, ever, ever.
Hey, like I said, I go in blind a lot of times, including this film, hosts. I see your point, Mike, but again, there's always that thought that you're going to be able to escape somehow.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it right. Yeah, I get it, but like I said, there are definitely worse things. So I can understand hers, you know, because there's that eternal sort of torture. But the problem is once he wakes up, it's ruined. She had her opportunity, yep. And she blew it.
Yeah, well, that's a fair point. Right. Yeah, because he was unconscious because they had a concussion or whatever. And so if she killed him then or pulled the trigger then, you're right. There wouldn't have been any issue in the sense that he's just dead. But of course he wakes up and then they debate and she tells him how he was her hero and, you know, always looked up to him and always loved how he was always there for her on the bad nights when, you know, the parents would fight. And again, they're not, when I say fight, it's not like violence or anything, but, you know, just typical, every so often people fight and a little kid doesn't know what to do and all that stuff. And then she said, but I'm going to blow your brains out to save you. And he's like, fuck you. He's like, don't do it. And then when she pulls the trigger, yeah, I think you could argue his relationship with her may have changed a little bit. I don't know if it really would have if they all survived. I think after that, he would say, I understand what was going on. But yeah, at the moment, yeah, he hated her because she pulled the trigger. I was shocked she pulled the trigger. And then when she pulled it and they didn't have any bullets in the gun, I was like, no way.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and again, that's part of the mental torture because the demons want the psychological torture, not just the pain physically.
It's like they're evil or something.
Right. Exactly.
Shocking.
No, yeah, and like I'm actually really happy that they're demons, because if they were aliens, their behavior would make no effing sense to me, and that's part of the reason I was so confused about this movie coming into this.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's a fair point. And they didn't really show any technology or anything of that nature. So. Yeah, I was still confused what they were too. I thought they were aliens too until, I guess, the mind talk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so for like 50 minutes of the film, I just assumed they were space aliens, or even at one point, like I said, I thought they were Will o' the Wisps as well, which are demons, kind of sort of in folklore. So yeah, it makes sense. Let's see, what else? Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about this film? Specific scenes, specific character moments? What did you guys think of the apocalypse? It was actually an apocalypse. It wasn't just with this one family.
Well, I was about to ask. So the ending implies that they're winning, right? The demons are taking over?
Yeah. Yeah, because what happens is we see a bunch of them, you know, looking out the window, right? When she looks out the window, Lauren, she sees a bunch of the possessed people. And then at the end, they show all the lights in the sky and they're not stars. And we already know dozens of people were around the house possessed. So it looks like it's an apocalypse and the demons are winning.
Yeah.
Well, is it just me or is that this basically like the end of The Invitation all over again?
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels like we've got a lot of that ending in movies.
Or 1BR, that type of ending too.
Right, in recent films.
That's cool. I like that ending.
I do. So do I. I'm just wondering, awesome. Is this a coincidence? Is this like something in the popular zeitgeist is causing us to end on these, oh, we escaped and oh, fuck, no. or is everyone just ripping off the same movie? I'm just curious.
I don't think that anybody actually, well, no, that's not true. I'm not going to make that statement. I don't think in any of the movies we've covered on this show, I'll go there, have intentionally ripped anything off. It's just, you know, they're thinking, how can I make this a bleak ending, and then they go there.
Yeah, that's all I can think of too, Mike. What about yourself, Mike? What do you think? Do you think it's a coincidence or is it the zeitgeist, like you said?
I really have no idea. There's a lot of people who rip off things in Hollywood. I know that. What was the Australian film that came out a few years ago with the comet heading towards Earth?
Oh, shit. What's it called?
It's
in our last minutes or something like that.
These final hours.
These final hours.
Best film ever. So, I rated that my best film of the year. Anyway,
I just say I know a lot of people who insist that the spoiler warning, the ending of Rogue One ripped off that film.
Yeah.
I have no idea if it did or didn't, but it is a popular thing, and there are notorious thieves in Hollywood. It is a thing. So I have no idea.
When it came out, I saw Rogue One, which I liked a lot, for the newer Star Wars films. I immediately told all my friends, "Oh my God, that was a ripoff of this movie!" And I gave them all the titles to have them all go watch the film. So yeah, I felt that most certainly.
Yeah, me too. But you know,
and that one, it was kind of possible to do because These Final Hours was this small film from Australia. Not many people had seen it. It's a genre film. It popped up just barely on Netflix. And so Rogue One is this Hollywood production. Oh, look at this. We saw this in this little no-name film. Let's do it. But here with this film or in 1BR and The Invitation, they're all basically These Final Hours. They're all teeny films. So it wasn't like Hollywood came in and saw these films and made a film ripping off those endings.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, another example of that, I'm going to pick on Star Wars again, was when Attack of the Clones came out and they do the clone army battle at the end and they're suddenly doing these handheld cameras and snap zooms that Star Wars had never done before, but we had seen in things like Battlestar Galactica, you know, it's just sort of like, you know, in the reboot of that, and some people were like, it seems like it's stealing some ideas there.
No, it's an homage, Mike.
Yeah.
An homage. Yes.
Hollywood mimics and homages all the time.
Yep.
Right. Well, you know, like 1BR, when they did it, it kind of made me think that they kind of got the idea from The Invitation, because The Invitation was released by the same company and the same publicist. Basically 1BR and The Invitation came out through the same company, and they're 1.5 to 2 years apart. So I was like, you know, I mean, you would think it's possible, but it's still, you know, really hard to believe that it was intentional.
Right.
More with Eric.
Yeah, but there's also if you're doing a shocking ending or trying to, and these are horror movies, it is kind of what they try to do. You are really limited as to the options that you can do, right? And when you're dealing with cults, you know, or apocalypses, the shocking ending is the apocalypse works, right? That's the shocking ending. So I can very easily see people coming up with the same basic ending, because there's only so many possibilities to go from that point.
Right. You're absolutely right. I mean, Dan O'Bannon, I think, was the director/writer that came out once, and he said it on his commentary for Alien, that there's no original stories, and you just have to take ideas that you may have already seen and turn them into your own.
You had to kind of get extra creative, you know, just find some flexibility and stuff.
They say there's no original stories, and then along comes Human Centipede, you know? And there's a reason why there's no original stories. There are places we should not go.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, that was actually Human Centipede 1 and 2 were actually pretty good films. The third one was pretty bad.
I'm not going to watch those films.
Beat her!
Doesn't sound appealing.
Well, they may not be appealing, but they were definitely really well done. The first two, put it
the I'll first
take
two,
your word for
the,
it.
The first two, the third one is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It is.
I couldn't even.
It is truly awful, and it's not that it's gross; it's that it's bad.
Yeah, exactly. It's just bad.
So I'm assuming we don't have anything else to say about the
movie. We're kind of running out of things to say here or think about.
All right. Yeah. Which is
since
fine.
We're now talking about different movies.
What gifts do you think they had gotten the Hendersons? That they would have
a hat for mom.
Yeah, all right. That's fine. So, we can... discuss our final thoughts and stuff on this film here, but before we do that, we can probably discuss what we've been watching, things of that nature, video games, whatever. Abe, what do you got? Have you seen anything?
No, not really. I just bought a new PC, a gaming PC, just so I could upgrade. Kind of keep my eyes to the ground for any new releases and stuff like that. Cyberpunk 2077 was one of the big releases, but I've been hearing very mixed things about its performance and other things like that. I haven't bought it yet. I've been kind of watching gameplay footage. But that was one that was people have been looking forward to for a while, but I guess it's having performance issues. And if anyone listening is a owner of a old, like a PS4 or a Xbox One, I would really stress not to purchase the game, because I've been hearing that the performance on those consoles has been disastrous for that game. Really bad. And even good PCs have been struggling to optimize whatever settings and requirements. It's been disastrous. I did see a really cool...
curse you, Abe Spinney. I just pre-ordered it and downloaded today, you bastard. Or my
it's
Xbox
not his
one.
Fault.
Yeah.
It's your fault.
You're the one that picked
the giant. Don't try and change the subject.
But I did see a really cool little game from an indie developer called The Hidden Deep, which is basically you play a mining crew who's going to rescue some explorers or researchers who went missing in a cave system, and you find this strange kind of like alien entity and stuff that's been growing throughout the place, and you have to survive, and you basically control the 4-man crew into scaling walls and breaking through barriers and controlling droids to kind of find pathways and stuff like that. It's like you see the character. It's not first person or third.
It's a scroller.
It's a scroller. Yeah, it's a side scroller, and it's really cool. I definitely keep my eye on that one because it looks like a lot of fun. Because they take inspirations from like the Alien and the Thing, and stuff like that. It looks really cool. That's all on my end. I've been just getting my new PC and. Do my writing and work, and so that's it on my end.
All right, very well. Mike, what do you got?
In terms of just what I've been watching?
Yeah, video games, watching, TV show, anything.
Well, video games, I can't really do video games because fucking Microsoft still hasn't restored access to my account. The only thing I've been watching, I watched, which is not a Dark Discussions topic, really, but I'd watched the... I've got one more episode to go. The series Queen's Gambit on Netflix, which I really liked, but it does star Anya Taylor-Joy, so who has been in a few things that we've covered. So,
thank you for pronouncing her name correctly. A lot of people are getting that wrong.
What are they saying?
Anya.
Okay.
She pronounces it Anya.
Like the
interesting.
Anya, yeah.
Anyway, so that was. Oh, and I've been watching the fourth season of Fargo, which, if we get around to news, I'll discuss again in a minute.
right, sounds good. I you know, people screw up my last name all the time. It just comes with the territory. It's not a big deal. Eric, what about yourself?
I got my Letterboxd up, but I want to mention this because it's not on Letterboxd because it's a TV show. I finished up Supernatural on Netflix. It's kind of sad to see the show come to the end. The way they wrapped things up was probably not what a lot of fans were looking for, but I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was satisfying in putting a bow on it.
And not going to be a reunion show, I can tell you that.
Right. So, yeah.
Oh, just spoiler alert there. Ooh, interesting. Well, they could do it in at the afterlife, maybe?
It doesn't even matter because nobody's really dead on that show. they could find a way to bring everybody back.
Oh, did Bobby ever come back?
They went for 15 years.
Yes, Bobby came back.
Several times.
Mom came back.
Several times.
Everybody
Dad came back
comes
several
back.
Times. Yeah. like I said, nobody really dies on that show. I'll wrap that up. I watched a Spanish language movie on Netflix called Don't Listen, which I enjoyed a good deal. So I would recommend that.
What's it called again, Eric?
Don't Listen.
Oh, that's
apparently
Spanish
you're
film.
Taking that to heart.
The Spanish film. The Spanish film.
Saw that coming.
Yeah.
I was looking at some information on Taylor Swift. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Because you should obsess about that some more. It's healthy. Then I watched a movie called Girl.
Yeah, what did you think of that, Eric?
It's all right.
Yeah, it was Southern Gothic.
I didn't like it nearly as much as you did.
Sure. The acting was great, though, right?
The acting was good. It was just there wasn't really – that whole story didn't particularly interest me that much. That's all.
Yeah. It's Anna, what's her name? Bella Thorne. I think that this could be a career boost for her. Shows
okay.
That she's really good actress. Anyway, continue.
So really, that's all I've been watching.
All right. Very well. Very well. For me, I've been playing a couple of video games. I played Machinarium. It's called. It's a puzzle point and click steampunk game. Kevin Letts would probably like it. Actually came out in 2009 by a Czech, I think, company called Amanita Design. And I bought it in a package with their new game, Creaks, which I just saw going through all the new games that were coming out. And I wrote down a bunch of them, and I decided to play something not as hard, dark, but more like adventure-y. And so, especially since I was getting Cyberpunk 2077 today. Creaks was their other game. And I finished Machinarium, and I'm playing Creaks now. I'm almost done that. And that is basically Machinarium is you play a robot that has to save his girlfriend robot from these bad robots, and it's in the steampunk city that reaches to the sky, and it's pretty cool, and the graphics are awesome, and it's a 2009 game, believe it or not. And Creaks, which is brand new, 2020, you play a guy that lives in this house, and something weird happens in the wall, and he finds a doorway in the wall, so similar to like a Coraline type thing, and he goes through the wall, and he's in this alternate dimension, and again, it's like this giant mansion that goes into the sky, and he has to, I'm assuming he's trying to find his way out of this mansion because he can't get back to his house the way he came, so like an Alice in Wonderland type thing too, and that's what I'm playing now. So those games are pretty solid. And then I'm still watching Big Sky, and that's a really good TV show, also by David E. Kelly. one of the big producers of out there. And it's a thriller. It takes place in Montana, obviously, because it's called Big Sky. Serial killer or killers that kidnap women or young girls or lot lizards, which are prostitutes, from trucker spots, and to three private eyes looking for them because one of their daughters has been taken, and they find out that there may be a wider thing where it's more than just one or two. It could be like a true serial killer. So it's a pretty good show on CBS. If you have Hulu, they release the episodes the day after, and also for free, the CBS app. If you have that, you also can watch it the day after as well. It's Tuesday nights, and it comes out on Hulu and CBS app on Wednesday morning. And that's pretty much it for me. Otherwise, playing video games takes multiple days. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this film here, hosts. But before we do that, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan. Oh, Eric stepped away from the mic.
Well,
no, I'm back. I just forgot I was muted.
Before we do that, can I get to the news?
Oh, yeah, we've got news. Yeah, yeah, sorry.
I did want to mention one thing, because apparently, so I guess Disney had their big investors meeting today, so they announced a whole lot of stuff that's coming. And to no one's surprise, they dumped, I guess, a lot of news about Star Wars stuff and Marvel stuff and cartoon stuff. But one of the things people have been curious about is, how is Disney going to handle some of the R-rated franchises that they picked up when they acquired Fox?
Like Alien.
And that would, right. Alien, which we happen to have been mentioning a few times. And I mentioned watching Fargo by Noah Hawley, who this also came up in last week's episode, I believe. And I have mentioned Noah Hawley's doing Fargo in the past, and also his series Legion, which is kind of sort of an X-Men story, but only very, very tangentially, and one of the most visually stunning TV series I've ever seen. And, you know, these are very, very top-notch, highly creative series. And he is apparently adapting an Alien series for FX.
Okay, interesting.
And he puts out really, really good stuff. So if he's doing it, and he takes time, like he stepped away from Fargo for 3 years to go do Legion, and then came back to Fargo. So he basically does what he wants. He wouldn't be doing it if he wasn't passionate about it. And my hope is, you've seen Sons of Anarchy, Phil. That's the same network as Alien. That's FX. So they're not going to shy away too much
from
the gore. It's not like Alien was known for like hardcore sexual stuff. It's basically some blood and gore, and even then it's not that hardcore blood and gore.
FX also did The Shield.
And they also did The Shield. I'm surprisingly, this gets me excited for Alien again. I did not know that was going to be possible after Alien versus Predator, Alien versus Predator 2,
Scott, or
Alien
Scott.
Resurrection.
Well, all I had to say is there better be some interesting characters in the show. That's all I have to say, because that premise could be pretty stale pretty quick.
Yes, if you watch any of his shows, and you can pick up any one of the three seasons of Fargo, for instance, which all of which are available on Hulu, they do characters well.
Yeah, and speaking of TV shows, Clarice, you hear about that?
Yeah, I laughed at that because I had just been listening to another podcast where someone was talking about how someone comes in and they're just looking at properties, like they're talking about how to pitch a show. And someone just kind of said, what are the things that we own? And they looked at everything that the network owned, and they saw like Silence of the Lambs. Like, you have Silence of the Lambs? Well, no, we don't really have Silence of the Lambs. We just have the rights to Clarice Starling. We don't have the rights to Hannibal Lecter. I said, it doesn't matter. Make a show out of it. And I guess this is a thing that happened because it finally is making it to air. So it's like, if I'm correct, this is basically a Clarice Starling series that doesn't have Hannibal Lecter. And apparently, I guess the rights to Clarice Starling and the rights to Hannibal Lecter are two different things.
Right, yeah.
Which is why the Hannibal TV series didn't use Clarice Starling.
Right.
That's fucking bananas. They were both in the same book.
Same book.
and the same movie.
It's
right.
So weird.
So I'm guessing, I'm not sure.
No sense at all.
Here's what I'm going to guess is that someone had the rights to, Hannibal Lecter didn't appear first in Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
So whoever first acquired the rights to Red Dragon had the rights to Hannibal Lecter. And then whoever first acquired the rights to Silence of the Lambs acquired the rights to Clarice Starling.
Right.
And that's how that's the reason why they're divergent.
That's all I can.
Hollywood rights are dumb. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
I don't know about dumb. I'm sure there's reasons for it, but they're freaking weird.
Yeah, they are bizarre. So yeah, this stuff comes out
weird,
on February.
Dumb, tomato, tomato.
This stuff comes out on February 13th. I mean, February 11th. And so that'll be curious. I think it still could be good even if they don't have Hannibal, because they could make it into a serial killer type weekly season similar to like Dexter or something.
Right.
And so it could work. Obviously, though, not having Hannibal, which is such a great character for her to play off of, is going to be unfortunate. But it still could be a decent show.
Well, they could. I mean, the humor is they partly based Agent Scully in the X-Files off of Clarice Starling.
Sure.
And so that character clearly worked on a TV series for whatever, 7 seasons or however long she was on before she left.
Right.
And then the irony being that when they were looking to recast Clarice Starling for Hannibal, they wanted to get Gillian Anderson, but she was contractually obligated not to play a character like Sully. So she couldn't play Clarice Starling, who inspired Scully. So I just thought that was fun. And then she ends up in the Hannibal series later, which didn't have the rights to use Clarice Starling. So it's just this all weird, incestuous Hollywood thing.
Oh, so you're trying to say that she was supposed to have Jodie Foster's role?
No, well, after when what was it? What's the actor's
name? Oh, you mean Julianne Moore.
I think they were going to try to get her for Julianne Moore role.
I think I read that. I did read
and
that.
And then they couldn't because she was contractually obligated to not appear as a character that was like.
Right. No, I heard all that. I did see though that this Clarice show is a year after the events of Silence of the Lambs. So at this point, Lecter is on the run. And so that's how they can do it without her being involved with that character. And it'll make sense. So they can say that, he's still on the run. So it's before Hannibal, the book Hannibal, but after Silence of the Lambs. So that'll be.
Well, and as we've seen with Disney, right, and Sony with Spider-Man, they're not doing it. Whoever owns the rights to Hannibal right now is doing nothing with Hannibal.
Right,
May be able to work out a deal, because it's not like they have a competing Hannibal project. I do know Brian Fuller would love to revisit and do a season 4 of Hannibal, and everybody involved would love to do it. They would have to do it kind of soon, because it has been a few years, and there's only so long you can go before you're Hannibal in the retirement home. But may as well get a few bucks if this show ends up being huge, right? Maybe they can get a few bucks and either buy the rights to Hannibal or lease him. I don't see why not.
Right.
no reason to give it up now because the show could suck and get canceled in 3 episodes.
Yeah. It's a toss-up. It's always a toss-up.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be curious to see how it goes. But it is coming out in a couple of months. Alex Kurtzman is one of the showrunners. And he's well-known for his work with the scripts and stuff. I think he was one of the guys that did the Star Trek reboots that J.J. Abrams was working on. He was the writer for all those films.
That's not a good sign.
Well, I liked them. I know you were, for some reason, disappointed with them, but I thought they were pretty solid films.
Well, Kurtzman's not the great... I mean, Kurtzman's also the guy, one of the geniuses behind the Transformers films, so...
Yeah, and The Mummy. Yeah, so that's not good.
So
the one with Tom Cruise, yeah. He did Spider-Man 2, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
From 2014. So, yeah. And then the other creator is Jenny Lumet. Jamie Lumet. And she is, Sydney Lumet's, Sydney Lumet's daughter. I don't know what she's done much, but she's at least one of the co-people there. Anything else? Anybody want
to
bring
up? Well, I will just say, just to tag this on finally, I know people complain about reusing, where are the original properties? There's tons of TV shows out there. There's plenty of original material. But when you have so many really good TV series out there right now based on pre-existing properties, you have obviously The Mandalorian is a thing, and you have Better Call Saul, which was a thing. What We Do in the Shadows is a thing. Fargo is a thing. Legion was a thing. Westworld was another one. All these things that are really good shows based on pre-existing properties, there's something there. You're right. It is a different format and different medium, taking the ideas and being able to explore them a little bit more in depth. And as long as they're continuing to put A-list talent on it, then I'm willing to check it out.
Sure. And you do have a fair point about properties, because, Eric will agree with me on this, but me and him have read a number of great books that we wish would be movies, but for some reason they never are, and everybody just goes back to Stephen King again. It makes no sense.
And yet you're doing a Stan podcast, so
indeed, yeah. So
well, and there's also the fact that at this point the mediums of television and movies are not as separate as they used to be. Because it used to be, if you were doing a television show, it had to be episodic. You had to be able to tune in every week and watch something and not need any backstory to understand what's going on. And television's not like that anymore. You get these long arcing stories. Fox, Supernatural, and 15 seasons, right?
Well, and if you miss...
out of a five-season arc.
Better Call Saul, I watched like the first 3 episodes of season one, and then I couldn't watch any more because they weren't giving them for free for unless you subscribed or whatever. And then I could have picked it up later when they started offering it again, but I was completely lost because it's not episodic anymore. It's a season story, and you have to follow.
It's all on Netflix.
Well, no, I know, but this was when it first came out way back. Season one when it was brand new. And stuff. Also, TV is interesting too. The line is blurred, like you said, Eric, because you have big stars now, like Amy Adams and Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and on and on and on, that actually do
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins, that do television series now.
Right.
You know, while back in, 15 years ago, if you did that, that means you were not an A-lister anymore. You were, just praying that you can find a job. Now A-listers are actually doing fantastic TV series.
Well, because back in the day when it was just the networks, you had to design your television show to be interrupted every 10 to 15 minutes for commercials, and therefore it was really hard to do good storytelling because there was no flow to the whole thing. It was just ads and a few minutes of TV, then more ads. Whereas
and you
now,
also couldn't guarantee that you were going to see next week's episode or that you saw last week's episode, so everything had to be standalone.
Right. And now that we have the cable companies making original properties or adapted properties, whatever you want to say, they can go with these whole, you know, a 10 episode story, which just wasn't possible previously.
Right. It's the truth. Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, you mentioned talent. Mandalorian has had Jon Favreau directing episodes. They've had Taika Waititi directing episode. Robert Rodriguez just directed an episode. There's another one.
I'm not even watching the show, and I've heard that Timothy Oliphant and Rosario Dawson showed up this season.
Yes. Carl Weathers is a recurring character, and they let him direct an episode.
That's right. He actually directed an episode. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard has directed 2 episodes.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know she was directing.
Yes.
Cool.
Yep, she did too, yeah, like her father. Yep.
But she still has a better hairline.
I hope so.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah. 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 And she sure is attractive. Now, any other news anybody wanted to bring up? All right. So, I guess we can probably start wrapping up. So, Eric, what other podcast did you do with your buddy Dan?
I do a general interest podcast called the Askancy Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got that one, or this one, rather. Sorry, I do too many podcasts. I get confused because I just started doing another one called the Basement Movie Cast, where we basically just do a commentary on a movie every week. This week we did it for – it's funny that you brought Jack Frost up earlier, Phil, because we did a commentary on it a couple nights ago, and that was a lot of fun.
Eric, you're like
that- – Eric. Eric, wasn't that a damn good movie for a film?
No, it's silly as hell.
No. Eric, you're like Nicolas Cage. All you got to do is you pay off your debt to the IRS, and you can stop doing all these podcasts.
Right, right. You're talking about the Jack Frost with the Killer Snowman.
Yes.
Right, and you didn't like that film?
I mean, I had a good time. I'm not. I can't call it a good movie though. It's ridiculous.
You don't have to be a movie snob, dude. It's a great film. It's fun. It's awesome.
It's not a great film. It's fun. There's a difference.
It is a pretty solid film.
The Godfather is a great film. Jack Frost is not a great film.
I was going to recommend Jack Frost this year for our Christmas film, but you suggested Host, and I said, oh, yeah, let's do that.
I'm sure it would have been better than, what was it, Red Christmas?
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's fun. So I will say it's an enjoyable movie. I'll say that. But there's a difference between an enjoyable movie and a great film. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. That's, well, for a horror film, for a good slasher film genre,
it's movie. Really, really, really silly.
Yeah. It's a good film. It's fun.
We had a great time doing the commentary on it, and you can find that over at geeknerdery.com.
What is it called?
Geeknerdery.com.
Gotcha. What are they using? Legion over there? Not Legion. Linksys or Blueberry or something?
I have no idea.
Gotcha. Red Christmas, Mike. That was the one about the abortion type thing or something.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was kind of weird. Yeah.
The Dee Wallace movie, right?
Yeah. They brought her in for an Australian film. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. And Mike, me, you, and Eric technically do a podcast.
Technically.
It's what's it called? What is it?
Cinema a la carte. You Know Nothing, right. Jon Snow. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots.
Now the cinema a la carte one, we should probably record that. Probably, I guess it's looking like early January is what I'm thinking.
Woof! Really?
Well, I don't. I mean, we because we got the big holidays coming up recently.
We can talk about that off air.
Yeah. So check out Cinema a la carte, part of the Dark Discussions Network of podcasts. All right, so let's get our final thoughts on this film here, 2020 Hosts from the UK. Let's start with you, Eric.
I like this movie. I didn't love this movie. I had a few issues with it. I actually have fewer issues now that we talked about it, though, than when we first started because of some of the stuff I missed. So I'm probably going to watch it again. I would recommend checking it out.
All right, Ape. So this was a pretty good film overall. There's a few little nitpicks here and there. Some things I had problems in terms of character behavior or some plotting performance here and there. But overall, it's a pretty good film. And honestly, I could recommend checking it out. It's got some great shots. It's got some strong scenes. It probably has one of the goriest deaths for 2020 in terms of the horror film genre. It's around if you want to check it out. Overall good discussion.
This was a really big surprise. Solid film. If you like horror movies, this is a good one for 2020. One of the better ones I saw this year. High recommend. And definitely check it out and look forward to see these directors do whatever they're going to do next. Mike?
Yeah, I think it's a fun film. A disturbing film in some ways. It isn't going to light the world on fire. This is not going to be a movie like the aforementioned Invitation where 5 years down the road and people are asking me on Halloween, what's a good horror movie to see? I don't think this is going to be one I'm going to pull out. But if you're looking for something to watch this holiday season, something to put you in the mood for Christmas, you know, you could do worse than this. I think it's a fun movie. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I think there was a lot to recommend. A little creaky in a couple of spots, and there was just the one scene that I found. But all the rest of it, I kind of enjoyed.
All right. Very good. Once again, this was a 2020 film entitled Hosts, Christmas time film, takes place. It's a UK film, directed by Adam Leader and Richard Oakes, first time feature length production, starring a number of folks, including Neil Ward, Samantha Loxley, and Nadia Lamin, and Frank Chakman are the big names, Lee Hunter, and so on. You find it anywhere VOD is available. So the four of us watched it three different locations, Apple Movies, Amazon Movies, and Vudu Movies. So available basically anywhere films are found. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Hosts. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.